Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, and today is going to be a special day. In the past, we talk about purpose, we talk about destiny, we talk about a lot of things, but one thing that we have not talked about or hit in quite a while is leadership. And man, I found somebody today who has not said it, but I'm going to say is an expert at leadership for what he's done over the years, and he's going to nail it. So that being said, Terry Smith, you ready to do this, my friend?
I'm ready to do it.
All right. So Roar Nation, check this out. Terry Smith has served as lead pastor of the Life Christian Church, TLCC, for 27 years. It is a non-denominational, I knew I was going to mess that up, faith community in West Orange, New Jersey, serving in the New York City metro area. He's passionate about challenging, developing, and encouraging leaders, whether they know they're leaders or not. Terry is sharing his insight on leveraging the power of hospitality to be an effective leader through his book, The Hospitable Leader. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Great to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You're a little bit ahead of me in time frame over there. You're in New York, and we're hanging out over here in Texas.
Yeah, I'm glad that you had the earlier time to do this.
You know, one of the funniest shows, you're familiar with Paul Young, who wrote The Shack?
Sure.
He was on our show about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, and I just wasn't thinking about it. We were doing a 7:30 show. That means it was 6:30 his time. And I said, so, you know, how are you doing this morning? He said, well, the best I can be at 6:30 in the morning. And I thought, well, that's not quite what I meant, but sorry about that. So it was pretty funny.
Well, I can't complain. It's 9:30 my time, so I'm good. It's okay. All good.
So, Terry, tell us a little bit about who you are. So in your bio, I didn't really hit really who you are besides the fact that you've been a pastor for 27 years. Why don't you give us a big overview of kind of who you are, what you do, and maybe a little bit about your family.
So I felt called to vocational ministry as a teenager. I had a sense that let me put it this way. I had a very clear sense of calling to the New York City metropolitan area. I had never been to New York City and kind of had a long and winding road that involved about a decade of traveling around the country and speaking to young people and youth groups and youth conferences and conventions and crusades and in local churches. Until I had the opportunity to assume the pastorate of a very small church here in the suburb of New York City, West Orange, New Jersey, at age 29, 27 years ago. So we felt called to do that, and we felt like we were supposed to spend our lives here. And over the last 27 years, that small group of 54 people who asked us to be their pastor has grown to several thousand people. And one of our claims to fame and one of the things I'm most excited about is that many people say that this is the most diverse church they've ever seen in the world. Mm. We just launched a new campus in Paramus, New Jersey. So I'm sitting now on our West Orange campus on a beautiful piece of property on a 4-lane road, 13 miles from Times Square. And our Paramus campus is about 5 miles from the George Washington Bridge.
Nice.
So that's that piece of it. Stop me if I go too long. I have a love for leadership. I love it enough that I earned a master's of arts in organizational leadership here 15, 20 years ago. I've written a couple books primarily about leadership. Co-founded the New York City Leadership Center. I have a wife, been married 35 years.
Yeah.
We celebrated celebrated Valentine's Day last night, and that was 37 years from the first time I told her I loved her. Thankfully, she told me back.
Yeah, thank you, Jesus, for that, right?
We have three kids. All of them are adults now, doing great, aged 26 to 32, I think. So,
okay.
That's it. I have nothing more to say.
All right. Well, let's talk about a little bit about your journey. I'm really interested because you made the comment from a very young age, you had a clear sense of calling to New York, which I think that's a God-given thing personally. Obviously, it didn't happen right away. It made me think of like the story of Joseph. Obviously, like he knew he was called to leadership at a young age and kind of put his mouth before the court, got himself in trouble. It's one of my favorite stories in the Bible, but and I think that was internal, but obviously it took a lot of years, it sounded like, before you ended up in New York. Will you kind of talk about the process, just a little bit of that, and how that played out?
Yeah. As you learn with me, John, everything's kind of a long story. So I'll try to, I haven't told this story for a while, so I'll try to make it quickly. I actually detail this story in my first book, which is called Live 10, okay. Which is not the book I'm thinking a lot about today, but the story is important. So I had this sense of calling when I was probably 16, 17 years old. People would ask me, what do you feel called to do with your life? And I would say, as a cocky, young, ambitious guy, I feel called to build a church of 10,000 people in a suburb of New York City. Now, at that time, there weren't very many mega churches, so that number sounded crazy and sounds crazy today. But I went through, and I told people that all over the place. Then I went through a very broken time in my early 20s, maybe mid 20s.
Please talk about that. Yes.
Yeah. Where, you know, what people said about me, John, was that I was very talented. And by that, they meant, this may surprise your listeners who are hearing me stumble around now, but by that, they meant I was very talented as a speaker and as a leader. I'd already done some things in the leadership space that was getting some national attention. But they would say of me, as I later heard, he's cocky. And I came to a place where I guess I would say my ego got me in trouble. And I don't mean moral trouble. I just mean there were some people who did not like me and probably had good reason to, and because of that, I went through a time where there were a lot of previously open doors that were closing. And bottom line is, I ended up in my office at that time on the floor with the lights out, crying. And I felt like the Lord showed me this unsanctified ambition. Mm. And it broke my heart because I was very sincere, but I was young and cocky, and you know, God can't use people who have such a sense of pride about themselves. You know, even I felt like the Lord showed me that passage that said that God hates a proud look. Sometimes I was saying, well, you know, in my heart, I know that I'm not all that. I don't feel pride. I know that I need God and so on. But somehow or another, the way I was reading to others was that I was this incredibly cocky, self-centered, selfish guy. And in that moment of brokenness, one of the things I heard myself saying was, I'm going to go to New York City and I'm going to build a church of 10,000 people. And I had already made a bunch of plans and had a file opened on all my dreams around that. And I got up, I tore it up, I threw it in the trash can, and I said, God, I will not speak of this again unless you make it very clear that this is actually what you're calling me to do. And for the next several years, I never said anything about it. I rarely thought about it. And then I had another experience too long to tell about, but driving my car down the road where I felt like God very clearly spoke to me and resurrected that dream. When I got out of the car at my house, I walked in the door and my wife said that I had a call from so-and-so, and it was a person from this congregation in New York City asking me if I would consider coming to be their pastor.
Man, I literally have goosebumps. I love the way you just said, because what I heard was, is you were willing to lay it down kind of at the feet of Jesus. And because you were able to lay it down, your ambitions and your stuff, he was able to lift it up the way he wanted it to be. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, that's really what I see there.
No, you're right. You're right. It was, that great story of James and John, who essentially said to Jesus, we want to be great. We want to sit at your right hand and your left hand in your kingdom. And he did not chastise them for their ambition. He just redirected it. He sanctified it. He said, well, can you drink the cup that I drink of? And the person who's great in my kingdom is the person who's the servant of all. As long as you're willing to understand that definition of greatness, yes, you can be great.
Hey everyone, I recently found an app that I want to share with you that I think would bless you. It's called Church Home. And what I really enjoy is the convenience of having great sermons, they have inspirational quick videos, and you have the ability to connect with other Christians all over the world. And what I love about Church Home is that it's not about excluding people and it's not about being perfect. It's about being together where everyone's welcome. So Church Home was started 25 years ago, and they had the belief that church isn't so much about a place, but about the people. And that was the thinking behind their new Church Home global app. It allows you to connect with people all around the world and have honest discussions, great, meaningful relationships. And the coolest part is you can do it all from your phone. So with Church Home Global, you always have access to a positive space and a strong community of people. And I just want to invite you guys today to join me at the Church Home Global app. You can download it for free at Church Home Global app. It's available on the App Store or Google Play. And you can text UPLIFT to 555-888. That's Church Home, CHURCHOME Global. Again, it's available at the App Store or Google Play, or you can text UPLIFT to 555-888. See you there. You really hit home for me, because when I felt like when I was young, and I'm just curious, let me back up real quick. Let me ask you this. So you realized, you recognized, or people thought you were cocky or you had this ego. And I'm just curious, did you feel like you were a confident person, or did you feel overconfident, or did you feel like maybe you lacked confidence and that was like an overcompensation? I'm just curious.
I would say that I was pretty confident.
Okay.
And I think all of us manifest confidence to cover insecurity. So I'm sure there must have been some of that. But I was pretty confident. I was also, it's really important to say, I was very prayerful. I was very sincere. I was very studious. I was very hardworking.
Yeah.
I didn't intend to be. I look back on my younger self and I was very sincere. But I needed to go through a season where my ambition was sanctified. And the truth is, you know, I have no doubt but that I wrestle with that all these years later, always making sure that my dreams are not my dreams.
Man, you nailed something there where our season, and I feel like I'm reliving my 20s with you right now, having this conversation, because I recognize that so much when you talk about that, because when I was younger, we bought our first business when we were 20, and I just had a lot of ambition, a lot of stuff, but I didn't understand how to treat people. I just wanted, I'm a very high D, get things done, a lot of drive, a lot of vision. And I know John Maxwell, I heard him make a quote or somebody said one time, you know, you can lead people, but when you turn around and nobody's there, you're just on a walk.
Yep.
And what I was doing was, is I could get people to go with me, but I would drive and push people so hard for the purpose of achieving a goal that I would wear and drive people out to the point of exhaustion. And therefore I wasn't being a leader, I was being a tyrant. And it was just, and it was terrible leadership because I didn't understand that leading is serving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So jump into that because I think you have, I'm really excited about, you know, you talked about unsanctified ambition because once, what does that look like? Because once we do that, that's really where I feel like we step into the kingdom.
Well, let me, if I may just back up to something you just said, which I think is incredibly important. This new book that I've written that is being really well received all over the country is called The Hospitable Leader. Create environments where people and dreams flourish. And the hospitable leader is coming out of my own personal leadership experience of both wrestling with my own ambition, but also being exactly the kind of guy that you just described yourself as being when I was younger and who I can still be if I'm not careful. And that is an inhospitable leader. And that's an inhospitable leader is a leader who is not hospitable to people and their dreams. A hospitable leader is someone who makes everything about their dreams or even the dreams of an organization without paying attention to the dreams or the needs of their followers. And this is a big part of this whole book is that a hospitable leader creates an environment where people flourish. And so many versions of leadership that's not how people experience leadership. They feel dictated to, they feel used, they feel manipulated. Well, I've had a lifetime of learnings and experiences and academic study that's helped me create what Jack Welch, the former and very hard-driving CEO of General Electric, calls a meaningful new approach to leadership. And it's this idea of how to lead people hospitably.
I love that. I thought I recognized his name when I saw that, when he was endorsing your book. I thought, where do I know that name from? And now you just nailed it. I knew exactly when you said that. Okay, how do we tie in Area of Destiny with your book on leadership, or we can just dive right into leadership? I'm good either way. I'm letting you take the lead.
Well, let me talk about it in the context of the book because I write quite a bit about this.
Okay.
So the hospitable leader is organized into five welcomes. And the first welcome is called home. And home is the idea that a leader can create an environment where people feel welcomed or they feel home. And when people feel welcomed, then they're much easier to lead. So it's impossible to lead someone who hasn't been welcomed. And a lot of times when people think about hospitality, they think about physicality. And that's important. That is an important part of it. But this is not a book about how to create a physically hospitable space, though that is part of it. You know, you walk in a Starbucks, the physicality of the place is important. I discuss that. But it's about creating physical, spiritual, emotional, attitudinal, and communicative environments where people feel welcomed, where their hearts are warmed, and where they can more easily be led. Now, the second welcome is called strangers, and that's where I talk about how that when we welcome a diversity of people to the table, we have the ability to expand our lives and expand our influence in a multiplying effect. And this is where I talk about how we've built a church that many people consider one of the most diverse churches in the world, racially, ethnically, nation of origins, incredibly rich and famous people, poor people trying to get their GEDs, people from all kinds of backgrounds in terms of denominations. So anyway, I won't get into it here. Well, but this is where I talk about what does it mean to be able to welcome the stranger, meaning someone to whom you are strange or who is strange to you, and to with someone who you may not have even have talked to before. Well, I'm surrounded by people 25 years ago I probably wouldn't have even known how to have a conversation with. And then the third, and now we're doing amazing things together. And we've been doing it for many, many years. So I share my thoughts on that in the second welcome. The third welcome gets to your specific question, which is dreams. So I have this whole thing around the promise of Jesus, which was given in the context of a leadership talk. And I unpack this at length in the book, where he promised in John chapter 10, verse 10, life in all of its fullness, or as the message has it, more and better life than you ever dreamed of. And in that talk, he's making a distinction between good leaders and bad leaders, or good shepherds and bad shepherds. And he calls himself the good shepherd, and he introduces a new kind of leadership, what I call a hospitable leadership, which is where he said that he would lead people to more life than they ever dreamed of. So I talk about the kind of leadership where the leader gets up every day, not just asking the people they lead to pursue the leader's dreams, but where the leader is just as invested in the dreams of his or her followers. So in other words, if you hang out with me, I am going to help inspire you to the life God dreams for you. This isn't just going to be about my dreams. It's not just going to be about the dreams of the organization that I'm leading. This is one of the dreams of the organization is to see your dreams come true. And part of that discussion then leads into this idea of area of destiny. Now, do I need to take a breath and give you opportunity to ask a question, or should
I? No, man, I'm taking. No, keep going. I'm taking notes. I'm loving this. Keep going.
So, when people know that you, as a leader, are invested in their dreams, that whole thing of the high D dictatorial leader who runs over people to get what they dream for, that goes away. In fact, people even put up with some of your high D-ness, and they'll jump in with you to help make you and the organization's dreams come true. If they know you're getting up every day saying, I'm going to inspire you to the life God dreams for you. And a key way we get at that here is we talk a lot about area of destiny. Area of destiny is the God predestined framework of our lives. It's what our lives are supposed to be about. And again, there's a lot of theology around this, and stories, and again, academic learnings that have gone into this idea. But essentially, this always surprises people when I say this, but I do not believe here's one of the implications of this idea. I do not believe that anybody can be anything they want to be.
Agreed.
And I think it's a mistake when people try to inspire, let's say, kids by saying that you can grow up and be anything you want to be. No, you can grow up and be anything God made you to be.
Well, I wanted to play basketball, Terry, until I realized I wasn't getting past 5'6".
That's a great point. So I often say, you know, I can't be the king of England.
Right.
I couldn't play in the NBA. Now, I grew up in Indiana. I can shoot like crazy, and I'm even big enough perhaps to play. But man, I can't jump to save my life. I jump like a white guy.
White men can't jump.
So what I have to do is I have to figure out what my life was meant to be about, and then I live there. Mm. Now, that can be geography, And for me, that includes geography, but it's the whole thing. It's geography, it's vocation, it's relationship. It is living in my area of destiny. And within my area of destiny, anything is possible. Scripture talks about the bounds of our habitation. The Apostle Paul talked about his sphere of influence. We have a place where we're meant to be, the sweet spot of our life. And so area of destiny is the, if you picture a Venn diagram, the way that we get at area of destiny is we ask questions about mission, which is to say, what do I sense God's calling to be on my life? What is the contribution that I'm supposed to make in this world that's in alignment with who God is and what he's doing in the world? So my dreams have to align with God's dreams. The second question are questions concerning gifts, which is to say, you know, what am I gifted to do? And what am I gifted to do that has been turned into skills that give me the opportunity to make a unique contribution? And the third thing is passion. What do I love to do? And the intersect between mission, gifts, and passion becomes our area of destiny. And it was this idea. I was speaking at a church in New York City a number of years ago now, and Jack Welch, former CEO of General Electric and founder of the Jack Welch School of Management, and his wife Susie, who's the former editor of the Harvard Business Review and a best-selling author in her own right, were sitting there. I didn't know it, and I talked about this idea of area of destiny. And they became such big fans of that idea that they actually did a television interview where they talked about how that their kids were so weary of hearing them talk about area of destiny that they walked in the house a few days ago and one of their kids said, "Hey, my area of destiny is doing fine today. How's yours?" Because and Susie, who's the career expert now on the Today Show, also does that kind of thing on CNBC. She says this is one of the best career ideas that she's ever heard, because once someone gets that right, then, you know, there are a multitude of things to talk about and to learn about and to believe for and pray for and work towards. Once we get the area of destiny question right, what is my life supposed to be about?
You talked about, we're on three on dreams on the five welcomes. You want to hit four and five?
Sure. I'd love to. The fourth welcome is communication. And this is where I talk about what hospitable communication is. I think that one of the major problems that we have in our world today, obviously, is the terrible polarization where people are trying to share their truth, or in a Christian context, the truth, in a way that other people cannot receive. Mm-hmm. And this is a whole idea of hospitable leadership. I create an environment where someone, maybe even someone who is strange to me and to whom I am strange, is willing to sit and listen to what I have to say. And I believe that a hospitable leader, because he or she really loves people, is committed to speaking truth. We never compromise truth, but we're committed to speaking truth in a way where people can hear us. That could be a conversation with an employee around a performance review, or that could be, in my context, preaching the good news about Jesus in a way that declares him as the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to come into relationship with the Father. But all of us have a tremendous need to speak truth, whether that's small t truth, you know, what I think, what I feel, you know, my political ideas, et cetera, or whether that's capital T truth, the truth about Jesus. We have an obligation to speak it, but we have to create environments where people will hear us. So much of the Christian church right now is doing such damage to itself and ultimately to the world, because we've created environments where we only speak to ourselves. We are not, they are not environments of welcome. And I think it's tragic. And so, you know, that's a small slice of what the section on communication is about. But
hold on, that, real quick, I'm gonna cut you off because you're talking about environments a lot, and I even read that in some of your summary. So why don't you dive? I still want to hit five because I want to make sure we hit all 5 points. But why don't you dive in a little bit of what that environment looks like, how to create that environment, whether it's communication or feeling, making people feel welcome, or we're teaching what you said, little T or big T truth. How do I create that environment?
Well, I think that we pay attention to, let's limit it to these five things. I think we pay attention to physical environment, spiritual environment, emotional environment, attitudinal environment, and communicative environment. A beautiful way to get at this. So the whole idea of the book is premised on the fact that Jesus was the ultimate hospitable leader. He constantly led in environments of hospitality. It's really amazing, John, when you look at the meals of Jesus. He is constantly speaking truth in some kind of a hospitable setting, whether that's the wedding at Cana where he first showed his glory, whether that's the fact that in the Gospels he's always going to dinner parties, both with sinners and hypocritical religious leaders. The Last Supper is where he gave one of the most important leadership talks in history. And I'll come back to that if we have time.
Okay.
You look at the breakfast that he cooked for Peter post-resurrection, where they reconciled their relationship and Peter went on to change the world. You look at the fact that the new age, the next age, is going to be launched with a huge wedding feast. So I use the table and the feast and the meal and Jesus in the midst of all of that as a metaphor for creating hospitable environments. One of the key, and it's in these environments, if you'll notice constantly, it's in these environments that he makes the meal about more than the meal, but he uses it to say something bigger from a leadership communication perspective. Look, this was so important to him. If they didn't have food, he'd create it. So a great way to get at this, and again, this will take just a minute. Please, I beg you to interrupt me if I.
No, man, I'm loving it. I'm hanging on every word you're saying. I've been diving into leadership for the last couple months, and I've been reading one of John Maxwell's books to my kids just for on this topic. So it's all yours, my friend.
So I challenge you on the Maxwell stuff, and obviously Maxwell's fabulous. You know, Maxwell says that leadership is influence. Well, what I say is that hospitable leadership is a precursor to influence. In other words, the technical definition of hospitable leadership is this: a hospitable leader creates environments of welcome where moral leadership can more effectively influence an ever-expanding diversity of people. John, you can't influence people who aren't at the table.
That's good.
So you can learn everything in the world about influence, but if you can't create an environment where people are actually showing up to be influenced, and if you're not, as I talk about, warming their hearts and so on. So anyway, the environment thing, I got sidetracked with the Maxwell.
That's good. You're good, man.
So the Last Supper, if you look at it from a pure leadership perspective, is really amazing. Obviously, there was a lot more going on than me trying to extrapolate leadership principles from it. But nonetheless, I argue that Jesus paid attention to physical, spiritual, emotional, attitudinal, and communicative environment. And this is how. First of all, when he's getting ready to have the most important dinner in history, he assigned his two most important leaders, Peter and John, to go find the place where it was to happen, and he gave them very specific instructions as to how things were to be set up, including the room was to be large enough, it was to be furnished appropriately, they were to prepare a meal, which was no small thing for, you know, Peter and John, these two guys, to prepare a Passover dinner. And you know, it was a dinner for 12 plus one. So he paid attention to the physical environment where this meeting was supposed to happen. And it's very clear when you look at this in the Gospels that this was very important to him. There are several verses given to him telling them the kind of physical space in which this supper was supposed to happen. Secondly, he paid attention to spiritual environment. The Gospel of John gives five chapters to the Last Supper. Five chapters, either sitting at the meal or on the walk from the meal to Gethsemane. You know, it comprises a large part of John's Gospel. This is an important thing that's going on. Early in the story, John's Gospel talks about how that Jesus knew who he was in relationship with the Father. He knew that authority had been given to him, that he had come from God and he was going to God. And I talk about how that we create spiritual environment by knowing who we are in relationship with the Father. I describe that as the state of being at home. When we are at home, when we know who we are, and we know the who we are-ness is coming to us because it came from the Father, that it's not self-generated confidence, but it is a security in our relationship with God, we create spiritual environment that feels really good to people. Thirdly, he paid attention to emotional environment. John's Gospel says in one translation early in the story that at that dinner, he showed his disciples the full extent of his love. And this is something that a hospitable leader does. A hospitable leader finds a way to let his or her leaders know how much they love them. Rodney Ferris, a leadership guru who's done a good bit of academic work on this particular subject, writes about organizational love. And there's this understanding that really has evolved a lot in recent years that a leader figures out a way to constantly be conveying his or her love to his or her followers. And it is amazing the kind of welcome people feel when they know they are loved by the leader. And then he pays attention to attitudinal environment. This is where he wrapped himself in the towel of a servant and got down and washed the feet of his disciples. Though he knew he had all authority from God, he puts himself in the place of a servant and he serves the needs of his followers. And again, this is part of creating a hospitable environment, is that you treat your followers like guests in your home. You find ways, great and small, to serve their needs. And when people work in an organization like that, when they attend meetings like that, where it's clear the leader who is paying attention to environment, that the leader sees themselves as being there to serve them. Well, I mean, obviously that's classic servant leadership, but there's more to this than servant leadership, because I say creating the environment is a precursor to every other kind of leadership. Again, you can't serve people who aren't there. And then finally, communicative environment. And this is where Jesus, he gives a leadership talk for the ages. And if you study what Jesus said at the Last Supper from beginning to end, from the perspective of a leadership talk, it's just amazing. He engages in team building. He lets them know that he's going to share details with them of the business. I'm going to you're no longer, for instance, you're no longer servants because I've called you friends, and I'm going to tell you the Father's business so that you can understand what's going on here. I mean, that's hospitable communication. Let me let you guys in on what I'm thinking, on what I'm doing. Let me make sure my stakeholders know what's in my heart. He tells them he's going to hold them accountable for results. I chose you so that you go and bear fruit. So this isn't just kumbaya. We're not doing this just so everybody can feel nice. We're going to do something together. We have a mission to fulfill. And he tells them they may even have to lay down their lives for it. But man, by the time he's finished with them, they're ready to, you know, run through a wall and jump over a troop. So, all right, that's my little primer on kind of a multifaceted approach to what it looks like to create an environment where you can lead people well.
That's a whole talk in itself, isn't it? That's good stuff. Okay, so we did five welcomes. We were on four. We were talking about communication, which got us into the environment. So we still have five on the welcomes.
Yeah, the fifth welcome is called feast. And so one of the ways Jesus described his leadership domain was as a feast that a king threw for his son. I just love this as a metaphor. So what did he say exactly? He said the kingdom of heaven is like a wedding feast that a king threw for his son. And I've just, early in the book, I ask the question, what would it look like for our leadership domain to feel like a feast to our followers? Well, so when I wrap the book up in the fifth welcome, I talk about how that in order to throw a feast, we have to live a feast. And this is where I talk about how that we have to cultivate our own happiness. The secret of that is hope. And I talk about ways that I try to do that, and how that when we are fundamentally happy people, that we create the conditions for success, both for ourselves and for others. People don't want to follow a leader who isn't living a feast. They want to follow a leader who is. So those are the five welcomes.
Love it, man. It's been one of the best shows I've done in a while. I think it's just kind of one of those good God divine things. I've been diving a lot into leadership lately. And I think that has a lot to do with leading our organization and wanting to do what you talked about is being kind of in that area of spheres influence and knowing our area of destiny and just making sure. It's been on my heart to make sure that including my family, starting with my wife, my kids, and everybody around me, that I'm creating an environment where people succeed.
Well, that's what hospitable leadership is about. And I think that you'll enjoy the book, John. I really do.
Oh yeah. I'm super excited about it. So you got me all over that one. Terry, as we wrap up the show, there's a question that I love to ask that I never skip. And that is this, Terry, if you could go back to the younger you, what advice would you give yourself? And you can't change anything. You're not going to change outcomes or anything like that, but you're going to give yourself a pep talk. What age would you go back to? What words would you give yourself?
Well, I was asked this on one of their podcasts a few months ago, and I think it's a great question, and I'm going to answer it the same way, though it sounds like I'm just following up on what I just said. But I think I would tell myself to be better at feasting. I was so sincere and so zealous and passionate that I kind of, at least toward myself, was very legalistic. And, you know, I wanted to change the world and change it tomorrow. If I had it to go back, I would have started working rhythms of feasting in my life better. And by feasting, I mean, relationships, honoring a Sabbath day, taking vacations, learning how to play golf, I never had any problem working hard, but it's taken me a long time to learn how to play hard and relax hard and to understand, as Stephen Covey says, that if I'll sharpen the saw, I can cut down a lot more wood. And so I think I would just say to my younger self, relax a little bit.
That's great advice. That's something I'm trying to learn myself right now. I'm kind of with you in that I have no problem working. I could work 60, 70 hours a week and not wink an eye, and I love doing it. But then you look back, what I have found in my life, I finally started finding that rhythm is as I start getting really depressed, emotional, and all of a sudden I'm like, well, why is the world ending today? And then I look back and realize that I haven't rested and I haven't done anything in quite a while. And emotionally and physically, I've just burnt.
Yep. You can't get to that place. And that's why I close this book with this idea of feasting. And what does that mean? And how do we cultivate in a biblical sense, a life where we are happy? Because happiness creates the conditions for success. I mean, all the studies say that when we're down and depressed and discouraged and emotionally empty, and when I get like that, I get depressed. Well, my leadership's not effective, and my parenting isn't effective, and my husbanding isn't effective. So,
absolutely. All right. So, Terry, I'm giving you last words as we wrap up the show. A piece of parting advice you gave yourself already. What would you leave with our audience?
I think I would say the most important thing, just from a life perspective, is to find your area of destiny and exploit all the possibility that's there. And, that's not a static place. That's where possibility exists in our lives. And yeah.
Okay. So Terry, why don't you let our listeners know if they want to have you speak and most get in touch with you, and most importantly, where do we find the Hospitable Leader?
Yeah, thanks. So we've opened a special page on our website for your listeners, John. And on that page, we're offering the Hospitable Leader audiobook for 50% off. And then people can, they can go to my website and the page we've opened for you, and they can order the book from anywhere. In other words, we have links to all the major retailers, all of whom, of course, are carrying the book. And if they want, they can become a part of the Hospitable Leader community, where they can hear from me every once in a while, just sharing some of my ongoing thoughts about the subject. So they can go to terryasmith.com/real. So that's Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, asmith.com/real, R-E-A-L. And they can access the page. It's been open for your followers. They can get the audiobook at 50% off, or they can buy a book, or, thankfully we have lots of leaders who are buying this book for their teams, going through it with their teams, pastors who are doing sermon series around it. And we have all those resources available for anyone who would like to utilize it.
Fantastic. Roar Nation, just so you know, we will have that on our show notes, and we'll also be posting it on our Facebook page as well. So if you're driving down the road, you miss that, and you need it, you can jump on our Facebook page or the show notes, and we'll have that for you guys, a direct link, so we can shoot you straight over there. So, Terry, I just want to thank you very much for taking the time to come on the show. I just appreciate your wisdom and your humility, especially just at the beginning of the show, you talked about, laying down your dreams, your ambitions, and your ideas at the altar. And because of that, I've seen what the Lord has been able to do, which is a great thing. And obviously, it's changed tens of thousands of people's lives because you chose to lay that down. So I just want to thank you for that.
John, thank you so much. It's been great to be with you. And I, I pray God's blessings on you and everybody who's listening to us. And I pray that everyone lives the more and better life that God dreams for us.
Amen for that. So Terry, hold on just a second as we wrap up the show. Roar Nation, man, love you guys. So excited for this. Please jump on this link. Please go get this book. It's going to help you. It doesn't matter. Husband, wife, not married. It doesn't matter. We are all called to be leaders. And whether that's leading our families, leading in the workplace, or just living the abundant life that Terry's talking about and what Jesus told us we could have. So I just encourage you, get on there, get the book, and just go change your sphere of influence, because God created you to do something amazing. So love you, Roar Nation. Please reach out to Casey and I. We want to hear your stories and what God's doing in your life. You can get on our Are You Real page and just contact us, send us an email. Love y'all. Remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to areyoureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.